you're a California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. I'm your host, Phil, and as always with me is my trusty co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West, Camille. Are you over jet lag yet?
I'm over jet lag. It's been a week and a half, whatever.
Yeah, I think I'm finally back to normal. I feel like I'm finally back to myself. Last week was brutal. There were like days that I was just like, falling asleep at my desk where I'm just like, I can't do this work anymore. This is too much. So good to be back on Pacific Standard Time after being over in Europe. But today we're going to be talking about, because it just got the green light from the Secretary of State to start gathering signatures, the second effort to recall Governor Gavin Newsom. We're not living in Groundhog Day. This is not old news that has been rehashed. This is actually happening. The signature gathering process has been greenlit to start. I think it's something like 1.2 million signatures need to be submitted by September 3rd. So away we go. And we've kind of discussed this back and forth about it. And I had asked followers on Instagram, like, what their thoughts about the recall or a second recall was. There's a lot of people who said it's a waste of time and resources, especially in a year where it's a presidential election. Some people are like, no, we absolutely need to do it. He deserves to be recalled. So the point of today's episode, even though the title, when you read it, it kind of sounds, it could be taken a couple different ways. It could be saying, do we need a recall? Do we need a second recall? Like asking a question, kind of maybe it's sarcastic where it's like, nah, do we really need a second recall? Like, are we critiquing it? But the point of today's episode is to kind of answer that question, does there need to be a second recall? Like, does Gavin Newsom deserve to be recalled again in terms of where California is? Now, I know a lot of listeners right off the bat are going to be like, yep, absolutely, he needs to be recalled. But I think we're going to examine more since his recall. We're going to look at stuff since then, the promises he's made, and see where we're at. Have things gotten worse or better? Has he done sort of the same, plateaued? Any thoughts before we hop into any discussion?
No, I'll let you lead this. I know you kind of have a timeline tonight, time frame. So you lead and I'll just add comments.
Okay. All right, then let's get started. You pulled up, his last state of the state. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, there was no state of the state last year. He didn't give one last year.
Right. And I don't know if that's standard or not. I didn't look into that. It's just like every couple.
Yeah, every time I looked at State of the State 2023, it popped up 2022. So I couldn't find whether he gave one last year or not. So we're looking at 2022, which works because it's right after, right? 2021 is when he got recalled, or they had the recall election. It was 2021.
Right. It was in September of 21 that he won the recall, if you will. And then, so it was like 6 months later in March that he gave the State of the State address. Then he,
right,
I guess, so he, you know, obviously won re-election in 2022, and he did do a little speech, like I guess an acceptance speech of sorts in 23. So maybe that counts as a State of the State.
Yeah, that's probably what they thought was like he gave his State of the State when he gave his big acceptance speech. Like he marched down that avenue.
His wife trying to speak in Spanish.
Yeah, that's right. And he was like, look at how good she is. Yeah. I mean, I'm learning Spanish, so I don't want to judge, but it came off really pretty badly on her part. It sounded like the whitest person possible trying to speak Spanish. But yeah, so 2022 was the last time he gave a state of the state. We're just coming out of COVID. I think the state of emergency was over in March of that year. So this was around the time he finally relinquished his state of the emergency powers. All the COVID stuff started to drift away, and it looked like we were kind of heading back on. Yeah, you know, we were going back
to life. Because I think all of us were like, we were still in a state of emergency. What?
Isn't that, that's insane, right? Like a lot of people, I don't think realize, well, maybe they don't remember because they want to block it out. But yes, the state of emergency didn't end in California until 2022, 2 years later, after COVID started. That's how long they held on to it. Even though there was no more restrictions, no one was wearing masks anymore, like it was all over, there was still a state of emergency going on in 2020. So we have some highlights from a State of the State address. What we're going to do is we're going to take some of that stuff he said. We're not going to watch him for Camille's benefit. We're not going to sit here and watch him again. So we're going to, I got the transcript. We're going to look at it. We're going to pull some things from it that I highlighted. And then we're going to discuss, like, where is California at this point? So that way we can answer the question, like, does he deserve, do we really need a second recall? And also, for just to kind of frame it, he's termed out in 26, right?
Yeah.
So maybe we should start right there. I think that's a good place to start, because a lot of people, I think, have misconceptions of what a recall does. And this is a good way to kind of introduce what is a recall in California. So if you don't remember what a recall is, or you're kind of confused on what the purpose of it is, when you recall the governor, first you have a vote. So first they have to collect all the signatures, and then they have an election. And all these people jump in. If you remember back in 2021, it was a melee of people all running. Plenty of people, great names that we know, who were all of a sudden jumping in the race. And they were all wanted to replace Newsom. The procedure is you have a recall election, and there's two questions. The first question is, do you think Governor Newsom deserves to be recalled? If the yes vote wins, there's a second question. And the second question is, if so, who would you like to replace him? So that's why we have like 20 candidates. And I think you have to get more than like 20% or something to actually, or is it just the top vote getter that actually gets?
It's the top vote getter. So it has to be yes, has to be 50% plus one vote for, and the top person, most votes, wins.
Right. So hypothetically, in the last election, Newsom didn't get recalled because a large majority of people voted no, he does not deserve to be recalled. So that's it. That's the end of the recall election. Nobody goes on to the second question. Hypothetically, if there was a yes vote and that won, we would have Larry Elder, who was the top vote getter in that recall election. He got the most votes. So right. He would have become the next governor.
But only for a very short time, because right. We were re-electing, that the election season started again in 20. So it would have been like about a year-ish that he would have been governor. And then obviously from there, he could have chosen to run again.
Yeah, Newsom could have just ran again and just become governor.
We didn't successfully recall him. We were able to successfully get the recall, but he still won the special election, and then he was reelected the following year. And then I'm laughing because, you know, you and I were together in person like a month ago, I think, when we started reminiscing about this, the recall and all the candidates. And then it was like 2 days later where they're like, they announced there's like, they're trying to do another recall. We're like, oh my God.
Yep, here we go again. But they have qualified it, and they now have to go start getting signatures. That will be that's the tough slog. Well, actually, the tough slog is actually getting enough people to vote yes. And I imagine we won't have another recall until next year anyway, which actually gives them more time because it's 2026. Well, yeah, it'd be like a year and change that we'd probably get a new governor. But yeah, so that was the craziness of the recall.
Because I know with the 2021 recall, they gave additional time due to things being shut down and the whole state of emergency. I think they gave an additional 4 months to collect signatures. And right. And I forget what the exact timeline was for that. We looked at it recently, but I don't remember now. So they wouldn't be giving that additional time. So they only have, do you know how many months to collect signatures?
April, May, June, July, August, 5 months, 5 full months, because it's September 3rd. They need to submit signatures by.
Okay. But then they don't do the election quite then. Then they set Newsom, I think, selects the election date.
Right. So, and I think it has to be within 90 days or something they have to have the recall. Okay. I feel like. Yeah, it has to be quick. Like, it can't be dragged out. Like, oh, the recall will be in next year in November. Like, no, it has to, like, be relatively quick. Because I remember it was a mad dash. And it was like, as soon as they got the signatures, which was around summertime, it's funny how many people waited until they got the signatures and then they all jumped in, like Larry Elder. So yeah, we'll see what happens. Recalls bring out some of the weirdest politicians you'll find. That's because everybody wants to throw their hat in the ring and everybody can run on the recall ballot.
That's another
that's another topic. So if nothing else, if a recall does actually get on the ballot, we'll have plenty of content and people to look at.
And so, it costs money. Just sorry, before we dive into this, I think it costs the state $200 million for the last recall, which is just, it's another important factor to look at.
Yeah. But a lot of people will say we've spent so much money on other frivolous things that $200 million seems like a drop in the bucket compared to whatever else we're spending on. So that's the process. So if people can kind of think about what is a recall if they didn't know what a recall actually does. I think because a lot of people got confused and were like, wait, didn't we recall them already because we got the signatures and it was on the ballot? But I think they got confused, like, no, you actually have to show up and vote whether you want them recalled or not. So that's our PSA about it. If it does happen, we'll obviously bring it up more about what a recall is. Anyway, so 2022, paint the picture. It's March. It's 2 years later after COVID. Gavin Newsom has just defeated his recall. He's in all his glory. He's ready to go. And he's also facing election that year, which he then wins. So I'll start with some highlights. First off, he says, tonight is also a moment for us to reflect on what it means to live in a society where elected leaders still settle our disagreements by and large with civility and compromise. Which I find funny coming from Gavin Newsom, because he does make a habit out of bullying people on Twitter and making snide comments on Twitter about everybody he doesn't agree with. So I don't know how much civility and compromise he actually believes in. First topic he talked about, in January, we proposed to pause the gas tax increase. Now it's clear we must go further. That's why, working with the legislative leadership, I'll be submitting a proposal to put money back in the pockets of Californians to address rising gas prices.
Who actually?
At a time.
I'm sorry. Who proposed this? I don't think it was the Democrats that proposed to pause the gas tax increase. I feel like the Republicans were like fighting hard for it, and Democrats didn't want to listen to us.
No, I think that was definitely a Republican thing, and I think they were definitely pushing for that. It never happened. The gas tax has gone up every year since then. So in terms of we proposed anything, I don't know what he's talking about, unless he has a mouse in his pocket or something, because Democrats were not on board with a gas tax or pausing the gas tax increase. So that never happened.
Big deal that year. Big deal.
Yeah, because I think it was, 50 cents or something? They were like, hey, if we pause it, we save people 50 cents at that time, which is a lot of money when you think about it. We have this in our notes. I paid $4.99 yesterday at the pump for gas at Costco, mind you. Not like an expensive place. At Costco, I paid $4.99. You had in your notes, how much have you paid recently?
Well, my husband fills up my car for me, but I looked at all my local gas stations, like 7 immediately around me, and every single one was $5.30 or more per gallon as of last night.
That's insane. So we're already topping off at $5 at minimum. We're already topping off at $5.
And I don't even live near, like I'm kind of far from the freeway. You know how, like, they can easily, like, this is the only gas station for miles, or this is the convenient one. Like, where I live, it's considered a bedroom community. Like, people don't come here for tourist stuff. I guess the next to the library, but like nobody really comes here. You know, it's just people who live here. So it's not like they're like, ooh, we'll get our, like, you know, everyone, this is the convenient gas station. We could just gouge prices. It's not like that.
He goes on to say, that's why, working with the legislative leadership, I'll be submitting a proposal to put money back in the pockets of Californians to address rising gas prices. But at a time when we've been heating and burning up, one thing we cannot do is repeat the mistakes of the past by embracing polluters, drilling even more oil, which only leads to even more extreme weather, more extreme drought, and more wildfire. So there's a graph that I think people have seen. Let me see if I can pull it up. If you want to talk amongst yourselves while I pull up a screenshot of it. So this is a graph that a lot of people have seen before. This is basically how much the state adds on to the price of our gallon. So it's $130 a gallon. This is 2022, mind you. I'm sure it's only gone up since then.
Well, yeah.
So the gas itself.
Every July 1st, and we have another little increase.
It always goes up a little bit. And then 2 cents, 12 cents state and local sales tax, 25 cents for cap and trade, 22 cents for low carbon fuel standard, 18 cents federal excise, and 51 cents state excise tax. So a lot of that is state taxes. Now, if you remember, his big solution to solving this problem was he wanted to, wait for it, he wanted to blame the oil companies and say that it's the oil companies who are gouging Californians intentionally, right? Because they don't want to gouge any other people in any other states. So in Florida, they don't want to gouge people in Florida. In Texas, they don't want to gouge people in Texas. Any other Midwestern state, Nebraska, they don't want to gouge people there. But they have a vendetta against California, and they've decided we're going to gouge prices specifically here by so much more. So this was, funny enough, this is actually a year ago, this article, March 27, 2023, in the LA Times. California lawmakers approved Newsom's oil bill. Here's what you need to know. After months of deliberation, the final bill does not cap oil refinery profits or penalize the industry, as Newsom had intended when he accused companies of intentionally driving up gas prices to boost revenue. Instead, the bill, SB X-12, gives the California Energy Commission the power to set a cap and impose penalties through a regulatory process if it decides that oil companies are making excessive profits and that a penalty will not result in higher prices for consumers. Sounds like it does anything, or does it just sound like it's more regulatory oversight that won't do anything?
Yeah, it just feels like we'll talk watching.
Because his big plan was he wanted to do this windfall tax profit. And we've talked about this before. Does a windfall tax actually do anything, or windfall profit tax? It showed in the 70s they tried to do that with Jimmy Carter. That didn't work. Most of the time it doesn't ever really work. It doesn't do what it's intended to do. It sounds nice. It's a buzzword. But it doesn't actually do what it needs to do. And this bill didn't even include it anyway. The legislation focuses on transparency, including requiring the industry to provide more information about maintenance and pricing decisions in order to allow state officials to better understand the market and deter companies from gouging consumers. Quote, even when we are not experiencing a spike, we pay higher prices than in other states, even when we account for our taxes and environmental policies, said Assemblymember Jaqui Irwin of Thousand Oaks, who noted that Californians paid as much as $2.60 more per gallon than residents of other states at one point last year. This is unacceptable. Well, if we look back at that graph, accounting for the amount of taxes and regulatory fees that actually go into a gallon of gas, I think the bill is not facing the right way. It should be looking inwards rather than outwards as to why gas is so expensive here. Let's see. Limiting profits and placing additional requirements on refineries could drive companies out of the state, reducing supply and increasing fuel costs, the oil group said. The industry had urged the state to take more time to understand the bill's potential effects on supplies. So instead of a cap approved by lawmakers, SB X-12 allows the Energy Commission to establish a maximum gross gasoline refining margin and a penalty for exceeding that margin if they deem it necessary before setting a cap and penalty. Commission must find the benefits of doing so outweigh potential costs to consumers. So
if it gives that fast,
It's been a year. Yeah, exactly a year.
Has anything happened?
I have not seen a report. I've not seen gas prices go down. I don't think I've seen oil companies shirk away from this idea of they're actually gouging them. I mean, yeah, today we're all paying over $5 a gallon for gas. So I've definitely not seen gas prices go down. There is a little bit more that I want to say. California's average gas price is not only the highest in the nation. This is from California Globe. the article that you sent over, it is even higher than Hawaii's gas price per gallon, which to me is insane because Hawaii is supposed to have the most expensive gas because it's an island and there's no refinery. Like, it's literally an island you have to bring oil to and gas to. I know they say California is like figuratively a island when it comes to refineries and gas, but Hawaii is quite literally an island. And it's cheaper to buy gas in Hawaii. In October 2022, Senator Shannon Grove of Bakersfield boiled down the actual problem of California's highest in the nation gas prices and gas taxes in a letter to the governor. The highlights are California's isolated markets, which I just said is kind of like an island, an inability to access additional fuel that meets California's stringent standards against the environmental policies, the most hostile regulatory requirements, the most aggressive environmental policies, the extraordinary expense of cap and trade, the highest tax per dollar of gasoline, impossible standards that are not found in any other state in the nation, and limited supply. So, I thought this was really interesting because we've talked about this in terms of how many refineries there actually potentially are in California and how much they've shut down. And we've made this argument that if you're all about protecting workers' rights and reducing carbon and the environment, you should be drilling for oil here. We need oil. Oil is something we definitely need. We need to refine oil. So why don't we drill oil here, ensure that workers have protections, they get a good wage, they have all that. They have the American employment law system protecting them. Also, it travels a far less distance. It's not coming from Ecuador or Latin America or any other country far thousands of miles away. Accomplishes two goals: protect his workers' rights, creates great middle class jobs and upper middle class jobs, and it reduces carbon. So I don't know, why don't we think about it that way?
It's not the California way.
It's not the California way to actually think about, let's produce more oil. In 1982, California had 43 operational oil refineries and a population of nearly 25 million. Today, we have only 11 operational oil refineries and a population of nearly 40 million. And those 40 million residents are driving more cars, living in more houses and apartments, working in more commercial buildings, shopping in more stores, and traveling more across the state. All of which takes more traditional energy. So there you have it. So to answer the question, did he tackle the issue of rising gas prices based on his state of the speech in 2020?
I would give that a no. Write those down, because at the end, I'm probably going to make a comment about all the things he promised and didn't deliver on. Yeah, it doesn't sound like he fixed gas prices. 2 years.
I know he sent out money, but that was 2 years ago.
Yeah. Was that what the Visa gift card things were?
I think so. They were like just prepaid debit cards, which I don't think people were specifically using for gas. But
a credit. And it was, I think, up to 400 per vehicle, up to two vehicles per household. We didn't get any.
I think we got one.
Yes. I remember
at first. We were like going through stuff, and then like we found something, and I found something. And I look at my wife and I go, "You didn't activate this card?" And she's like, "No, I thought it was like junk mail. I thought it was like one of those junk mail credit cards." I'm like, "No, this is like an actual card." And she called up the number, and they're like, "This is preloaded with $100. It's now active." And she's like, "Oh, got $100." It's like, well, it's our money anyway, so. This was interesting. He brought up in the state of the speech, he kind of did this like loosely based, like drilling even more oil, which only leads to even more extreme weather, more extreme drought, more wildfire. He kind of tied drilling for oil to the wildfires that we've experienced. I was trying to see if of course, there's plenty of things to say like, yeah, oil's bad and refining for oil is bad and for polluters. I've never seen any direct correlation between the wildfires happening and drilling for oil or how much we drill for oil here in California. It seems like those are not really directly connected. It's not like the drilling starts the wildfires.
There's lots of fires. Whenever one of the really big fires, PG&E took credit, is obviously not the word, fault. They admitted
full responsibility.
Fault. Yeah, it was their responsibility. And obviously, it's not all the fires, but I do know that California is really bad about cleaning up the brush that, you know, ignites easily during a hot summer. And we don't store water that we get during our very rainy years. And so we don't have available water. So, yeah, I don't know how you can blame that on oil.
I mean, it's a tangential, it's a tenuous argument. You can say, well, drilling for oil might cause carbon, global warming, which is still a whole debatable issue anyway, but to directly cause and say like, oh, oil is why we have wildfires in California, it's a real tenuous stretch to say that they're connected somehow. They're not. I mean, if your argument is, well, we got to get rid of oil and you have to pay $6 at the pump because we have wildfires, it's kind of like, why don't, or you could just do your job and like, you know, protect forests and actually do forest management and have plenty of water. That's a novel idea too. And not just blame it on oil, because we all know oil, big oil is always the big boogeyman for Democrats. They've been going after big oil since I even started following politics. It's always the big boogeyman is big oil. But his solution, because we don't want to have people use gasoline or oil anymore in their cars, is obviously electric vehicles. He goes on to say, underscoring the importance of accelerating California's leadership in clean technology. And I apologize to everyone out there. I don't do a good Gavin Newsom impersonation, so I'm just not even going to try. It's too raspy. My voice would hurt. This is not just a national security and environmental justice imperative. Clean energy is this generation's greatest economic opportunity. A perfect example, our dominance in electric vehicle sales and manufacturing. It was California's policies that created this market. Now we have the opportunity to extend this leadership to secure a critical component of the supply chain for batteries by tapping the world's largest lithium reserves right here in California. So right there, there's always this concern about actually mining lithium. It's like messy. You have to use, shocker, you have to use trucks and equipment that are powered by oil to actually get the lithium out to create the batteries, creates a lot of carbon. So it's not an absolute clean operation to go get that lithium. Our nation leading climate investments, $38 billion, will ensure that other innovations will surely follow, not by recreating the 20th century by extracting more oil, but by extracting new ideas, drilling for new talent, by running our economy on a carbon-free engine. It's a cute use of words right there. Drilling for new talent. His speechwriter must have thought they were really like clever when they did that. They were like, I got this, is going to be good. I'm going to use like oil terms to talk about what we need to be doing. Okay, electric vehicles. This really isn't like Newsom's fault per se, but since then, do you think EVs have gotten more popular or less popular?
Well, I think they're a little more popular. I think Tesla, people want Teslas. I think people want Teslas just for the Tesla name. I swear if it was gas powered, they'd still be getting them. But the thing is, like, there's tons around me. I don't go anywhere, so I don't know about everyone else. There's tons of Teslas on the road around me. People are still complaining about their inability to charge them.
Yeah. So this year, I think EVs, the news is that EVs have hit a wall. EV sales have hit a wall. Yes, people want EVs. They think, maybe people think it's a good idea, but I think the reality of implementing it is much harder than they were expecting. And I think a lot of places who thought, and this is something else Gavin Newsom proposed, is that all cars in California are going to have to be electric by 2030. So we're what, 6 years away from that. And we have quite a long way to go before everyone has an EV. Now, that's not to say you can't like go buy a car.
It's just car sales.
Right. They don't have to be EVs by 2030. It's just you won't be able to buy a gas-powered car in California. That's what they're trying to do. I don't think they're going to accomplish that goal. I think that's probably going to be pushed off like 5 years. Every time we get close, it's going to get pushed off 5 years because it's just kind of I just don't think it's logical.
I have an interesting observation about that. So we, you know, went out of the country a couple weeks ago. We drove. It's easier. Six of us and all of our luggage, it's easier for us to drive to the airport and park. And so we paid for like this one structure and it's three or four levels, and the bottom level is primarily EV parking with the chargers. And it was mostly empty. I just took my daughter to her orthodontist appointment on Monday, and they had redone the parking lot recently with a bunch of EV, charging spots. They're usually all empty, and it's so frustrating because I need a spot like right in front of the dentist. No, it's all EV parking, and like I'm seeing that implemented more and more. And there's often like, let's say, 6, 7, 8 spots, and there'll be maybe one car in them. Mm-hmm. So I understand.
Yeah, we noticed that a lot too.
Ready, but you're right. Like that means that the demand is not there yet.
Right. So this is from Forbes magazine. This came out March 24th, a couple days ago. In a sobering revelation from a Boston consulting group study, the vast majority of potential EV adopters want three things to happen before they'll seriously consider switching from gas to EV. They want under 20-minute charging times, which has been a big concern, a 350-mile-plus driving range, and a sticker price of under $50,000. With only one EV, the Hyundai Ioniq, I don't even know how to say that, long range, meeting those criteria, the industry has a long way to go. So it says, in the U.S., EV sales have increased since 2016. In 2017, they were around 65,000 EVs sold. And by 2022, that number had ballooned out to over 800,000 sales. Following an upward trend, EV sales increased 51% in the first half of 2020. Still, those gains represent a decline from the 71% growth in the same period last year. In addition, Tesla, the market leader with over half of all EV sales, recently revealed its lowest quarterly profitability in previous 2 years, which caused a $138 billion decline in the value of the company's shares. Meanwhile, in Britain last year, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak made a major U-turn on the country's planned ban of gasoline vehicles when he announced that the government was postponing its introduction from 2030 to 2030. Another company to maximize profitability, General Motors, has announced that it's pulling back on its plan to build 400,000 EVs by mid-2024. 2 years ago, the company said it'll phase out internal combustion by 2020. Plans to collaborate with Honda to develop a range of more reasonably priced EVs have also been scrapped. Executives at Ford said they don't currently require the production capacity to fulfill demand, thus they are postponing billions of dollars in EV investment. Finally, it goes on to say there's also strong evidence that shows most individuals who buy electric also own an internal combustion engine powered vehicle. Quote, they are not switching to electric vehicles from their gas powered vehicles. Most electric vehicles are bought as, quote, complements, not as replacements, according to economists. They're merely increasing the overall quantity of automobiles they have on hand. So, this idea of we're leading the way and we're plowing forward with EVs, it's kind of slowing down at this point. I think more people are seeing that the infrastructure is not there. Like you said, like it's not convenient. We don't know, like the people, it's hard to find charging stations unless you're a Tesla. I think Tesla finds it for you and they'll give you directions. But most of the electric vehicle, other ones, they don't have supercharging. It takes hours. It's a long time. A lot of people live in apartments, so like, where do you charge it? They have charge, like, so, this idea of like electric vehicles are going to be paving the way for California, and that we're going to be ready in 2030 to do that. I don't think that's going to be a reality. I think that's probably going to fall short. What are your thoughts?
It's probably a pushback, like you said. We're just not ready for it.
Yeah, I think it's just it's a lofty goal. I just don't think it's going to happen. And like that article said, there's a lot of people who still have a gas-powered car for plenty of other reasons, probably reliability, long-distance trips, they know they can do it. But maybe they have a little electric car that they can kind of just pop around town, which makes more sense.
Even if all of us could afford to, like, buy a new Tesla, think about now, like, for us, we have a few teenagers. And if our kids want to buy a car or we want to help them buy a car or whatever, like, can you imagine, like, my husband and I, like, we each replace our car with an electric car, and now we need to spend... Or somehow our kids need to afford to, which, okay, different subject that we will go off on, but like fast food places aren't even hiring kids anymore because they're like, I'm not going to pay a 16-year-old $20 an hour. And so how are my kids ever supposed to buy a car, let alone a $50,000, $80,000, $100,000 electric car? Anyway.
Yeah.
Who can afford to live like this?
It's not getting easier in California. That's for sure. It's getting much harder. His next topic you want to turn to is the economy. He goes on to say, when it comes to the economy, California is unmatched. We dominate in research, innovation, entrepreneurialism, venture capital, and remain the world's fifth largest economy. Our GDP growth is, well, I think we're going to talk about that. Our GDP growth has consistently outpaced not only the rest of the country, but most other large Western democracies. In December alone, 25% of America's jobs were created right here in California, a million new jobs in the last 12 months. More new business starts during the worst of the pandemic than Texas and Florida combined. Comment about the this statistic that they love to use with business applications. I was watching some video on YouTube. It was like, walk, don't run. He made a good point, which is, They like to say, oh, most business applications and new businesses, it's something like 70% of those applications. First off, we don't even know like what they are. We don't know. They're not going to necessarily be big businesses. Many of them are just like LLCs. So here in California, if you want to be a freelancer, you have to be an LLC. So that contributes to how many you start. It's just you. You're not creating jobs. And we don't know whether these businesses are actually creating a lot of jobs, like they could just be someone's sole business. But California just got some great news, and by great, I mean absolutely horrible, about the economy and where they're at. The AP wrote, California's unemployment rate is the highest in the nation. Slower job growth is to blame. So
what date is that? I feel like
this should be, this is March 22nd, 2020.
Awesome.
I wish I had a soundboard like The Price is Right, that like horn that goes bump, bump, ba-dow. California's unemployment rate is now the highest in the country, reaching 5.3% in February, following new data that revealed job growth in the nation's most populous state was much lower last year than previously thought. Sad. California lost a staggering 2.7 million jobs at the start of the coronavirus pandemic, losses brought on by Gavin Newsom's stay-at-home order, which forced many businesses closed. The state had added more than 3 million jobs since then, a remarkable streak that averages over 66,000 new jobs per month, according to the State Employment Development Department. But this year, while the data initially showed California added 300,000 jobs between September 2022 and September 2023, the corrected numbers released earlier this month show that the state added just 50,000 jobs during that period.
Oh my gosh, that is quite a difference.
That is a enormous difference.
That is just two totally different things.
Yeah, that's quite misleading. 300,000 and you've only added 50,000. 50,000 jobs added in California in a state of 40 million people.
Wow.
That's not a lot of jobs. That's really horrible. Just as also as an aside, whenever you see jobs numbers in like the news, they're like, oh, there's so-and-so created this many jobs. Wait 3 months and then go back, because a lot of these government agencies, once they start to get the real numbers in, this has been happening with the Biden administration, like this entire administration, they'll be like, look, we created this many jobs. And then they go back and they're like, just kidding. We only created like, you know, how many millions of jobs? Like, it's not that many jobs. So always wait a little bit when they release jobs numbers in the economy, because the hard data has to come in and then they'll fix it.
Yeah, I missed up really fast. Because I don't think we said at the beginning, Newsom, sure everyone knows, but Newsom actually postponed his State of the State address this year, or hasn't done it at all. And that's kind of what we're like, this could be our own State of the State. Let's talk what's really going on. But it'll be interesting to see if he even does one. But you can see why he doesn't want to do one. What is he going to talk about?
I mean, he'll figure out how to spin it. He'll talk probably about social justice issues. He'll probably talk about how California bought, you know, 500 million abortion pills or something like that. Like, that's a big thing
Prop
to do.
Prop
1 passed, so now we got billions of dollars to throw at homeless nonprofits and construction unions. Help homeless. That's what they want to do. They want to help homeless, not enrich their nonprofit and union buddies. Yeah, so you're right. This was something we were kind of batting around, like, should we do our own state speech, but then we kind of wrapped it into this recall idea. He's been delaying it and postponing it because he wanted to wait until he saw what happened with Prop 1, because he didn't want to do a State of the State if Prop 1 failed, because that's like his signature proposition or piece of legislation. Quote, I think California's economy is the leading edge of the national economic slowdown, said Seung-Won Son, a professor of finance and economics at Loyola Marymount University. 7 of California's 11 job sectors lost jobs in February. That's not good. That's an overwhelming majority of job sectors lost jobs just last month. The largest decrease was in construction, with 9,600 jobs lost, a reflection of disruptions from a series of strong storms that hit the state in February. The job losses would have been much worse had it not been for a strong showing among the healthcare sector, led by increases in jobs such as acupuncturists and dietitians, according to the State Employment Development Department. So, thank you, acupuncturists and dietitians, for keeping those jobs numbers better than what we expected. We owe a debt of gratitude to the acupuncturists and dietitians who are keeping our economy afloat right now. The economic slowdown has made its way to the state's budget, which for the second year in a row is now facing a multi-billion dollar deficit. We've talked about this, $73 billion. There's another article you sent me. Was it the OC Register? Yes.
You actually added that one.
I did. Okay. Right. It just goes on to talk more about it. But they said, for example, it estimated in the first half of 2023, the state had gained an average of 32,500 jobs each month. But in January, revised that to an average loss of 400 jobs per month. Let that sink in.
That's not a lot.
They said they added 32, but then they revised it to negative. So it went completely in the opposite direction. So those jobs they said they added, didn't actually happen.
Running these numbers? What is going on here?
Imagine being that far off to be like, yeah, we added 32,000 jobs this month. And then a month later, it's like, just kidding. We lost 400 jobs this month. A recent poll by the Public Policy Institute of California found that majority of Californians think the state is headed in the wrong direction, predict bad economic times for the state economy in the next 12 months. Yeah? Okay. So California is not feeling good about the economy.
California is leading the way.
This is the California way. That was the whole theme of this State of the State. He kept saying, this is the California way. So this is the California way. Let's see. He goes on to say, speaking of not leaving people behind, no state took bolder steps to protect public health and human life over the last 2 years. Our lockdowns, distressing as they were, saved lives. True or false?
That's such a loaded question. But I'm sure you can find data that says the lockdowns prevented COVID from spreading in certain areas. Did it save lives? I mean, here we are looking at people don't have jobs. Sorry, I keep getting my desk. People don't have jobs. Did that save your life? People lost businesses. People committed suicide. Mental health got worse. Homelessness got worse. Did this really save lives? Like, obviously, my answer is, no, this didn't save lives. And maybe the technical answer is it saved some lives from COVID. But when you start looking at it from all angles, it ruined lives. It destroyed
you. Just going back, I forgot to ask you to tally. Do you think he's done better on the economy and kept his promise since 2022? If you want to write that down.
No, it's okay. Definitely a lot worse.
Our mask mandate saved lives. That's what he said. This was in the Chicago Sun-Times. New research shows...
Mandates are just wrong. They're wrong.
New research shows CDC exaggerated the evidence for masks to fight COVID.
I am not a person who, like, and I saw people wearing, like, not a lot of people, but while I was traveling, like, there was people wearing masks. And I remember somebody getting on the airplane, and my initial thought was, like, really? I did. I went there. But then I stopped myself because I thought, okay, that person believes this mask is helping her or maybe preventing her from spreading something. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to get mad at her about that. Like, she believes she's doing this for good for her or other people, whatever. Fine. Like, I'm not going to be cruel and judge her about that. But man,
no, I've never been that way either. I like, if I see people out in public with masks on still, I'm like, I don't really care. Like, as long as you're not forcing me to actually do it.
It's not hurting me, but don't tell me that I have to mask up. And that's where that was so ridiculous when they tried to mandate the vaccines and they tried to mandate the masks and they tried to mandate you into staying home. And they, like, no, No, and I will never understand anyone who actually looks at the government and thinks, oh, you need to tell me what to do. Like, I wonder how people even mentally get there. Like, talk about mental health issues. How do you possibly look at the government, people you don't know, and think, oh, you absolutely know better than me? They can't even do math on jobs, guys. They don't know what's good for you. They literally can't even math.
Yeah, they're not good at math. I don't think you should listen to them specifically on this for your personal health. The study was published by Cochrane Library, an authoritative collection of scientific databases, analyzed 18 randomized control trials that aimed to measure the impact of surgical masks or N95 respirators on the transmission of respiratory viruses. It found that wearing a mask in public places probably makes little or no difference in the number of infections. So there you have it. So on his claim that his lockdowns and mask mandates saved lives, did it or did it not?
That's a big old question to work with. No.
Okay, here's the big one that he talked about. He says, but there's another crisis we're still tackling. That's the crisis of homelessness, which has worsened over the last decade, not only here in California, but across the nation. Just a few years ago, California lacked any comprehensive strategy, no accountability, no meaningful state resources to solve the problem. But that's all changed. In just 3 years, we not only have a comprehensive plan, we're also requiring new accountability and providing unprecedented investments for cities and counties. If you want to go back and listen to our whole podcast on Prop 1, we go in depth on Prop 1 and what the whole plan for Prop 1 is. So this is 2 years ago. Gavin Newsom said they have a comprehensive plan for new accountability. Between those 2 years, I don't think that plan was ever implemented, because now we have Prop 1. Because the reason they sold Prop 1. What's that?
I have notes on this.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, this is when he starts talking about Care Corps, or maybe he'd been talking about it prior to that. But again, this is March of 2022. So this is 2 years ago, and I can't believe March 2022 was 2 years ago. So I don't know if this was when he announced it or if it was prior, but anyway, he obviously is talking up Care Corps, which is like what you're talking about he's about to go into. So it was not established until October of 2023. I get there's a system, there's a process in place, it takes time, it's voted on, whatever. But that was 19 months later. October 2023 was only a handful of months ago. As of January of this year, it was only implemented into 8 counties. We have 58 counties in California. Well, 8 counties out of 58 have Care Corps, which I'll let you talk about what Care Corps is in a second. And in that October to January, they only had 2 applicants. Maybe that's a lot for 8 counties, but how many homeless people do we have? And only 220 applicants for this program that took 19 months to establish.
I actually went to a homeless. It's actually funny. I was sitting. It's funny. I got the news that Prop 1 passed while I was sitting in a seminar about Care Corps.
Okay.
With someone, with the judge who actually practices Care Corps here in San Diego. I think she's the only one who does it. I think they said they had like 58 cases so far in San Diego. Like, that's all they have so far. It's very early. Like, they just started it. It's very early. We went over the whole thing. I'm not going to bore you to death with like what Care Corps is. But basically, it's like they can petition. It gives them the opportunity to go into to get some rehab, get some services, get clean, all that stuff. It basically kind of grabs people, and you know, paramedic. I even learned like paramedics and first responders can petition for some of these people to go to Care Corps.
Under a roommate, a community leader such as a policeman, fire, EMT, judge, attorney, etc. And so, I could go apply for somebody if like it was one of, you know, like my sisters or something, that they don't need it. Sorry, I just use hypothetical examples. Yeah. But like I could be someone who could go apply, and then they look at the case. I believe you have to have an extreme mental illness such as schizophrenia.
I think it's extreme mental illness. Yeah, something along those lines. Grave disability, which I think also includes substance abuse.
Yes.
So that's something that the legislature has tweaked, because before it was grave disability was a whole different set of things, and now adding substance abuse changes the dynamic of, like, okay, if someone's high on meth or something running around the street screaming about stuff, like, okay, that's a grave disability, we can get them into care court. But that you bring up a good point, which is, it's only, you know, this is 2 years ago he's been talking about care court. At this point, we're literally just getting it off the ground. Not that many. It's like 50 people in San Diego, thousands of people here in San Diego who are homeless. So not really, I don't think it's moving the needle quite yet, care court.
Do you know what the budget was for that? I should have written it down. I probably haven't.
I actually don't remember what the budget was for that. Yeah, I don't have the.
I find it real quick. One thing that stood out to me, I was looking at different counties, their questions, you know, FAQs about care court. And one thing was someone, you know, one of the questions, like, well, what about housing? And it was like, well, on an as needed and available basis. And I'm like, okay, well, what housing would be available for this? I don't even know. I would have to do more research into all that. But it's like, I think it's an inpatient service for, I don't remember how many months, but whatever the time is, they bring the person in, they try to rehab them. And then if there's not housing available, I guess they're just released back out into, you know, if someone can take them in, great. If not, they're just released back out onto the streets. Good luck. Pat on the back.
Yeah, basically. Yep.
There's no jobs.
Well, as we've learned, they're not good at counting how many jobs California is adding. So there's no jobs.
There's no jobs.
Just for numbers, the last department tally of homelessness in California, according to CalMatters, is 28% of the nation's homeless population. And that's up nearly 40% from 5 years ago. And this article is from 2017.
So Newsom didn't even give care court a fair chance before he started pushing Prop 1. And correct. I understand that care court isn't for every homeless person. I get that it's more like, because every homeless person is not mentally ill, every homeless person is not a drug addict. As we talked in an episode a few weeks ago, a lot of people are being driven into homelessness by lack of jobs. Surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that not every homeless person is having this issue, but I don't think it's only like 220. Let's be fair and say there's 300 applicants, but like it's, I don't think that of 180,000 homeless people, only 300 of them have mental health issues. And certainly it hasn't expanded into even all of California. There's just eight counties, trying it out right now, but still, fair chance. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
So do you think he's delivered on his promise to solve homelessness since 2022?
You totally froze after you said so.
Oh. I said, do you think has he delivered on his promise to solve homelessness since 2020?
All right. No one's going to solve homelessness, but has he even come even a little close to fixing it?
Has he made
it?
A dent
no.
in homelessness?
No.
Okay.
No.
He hasn't made a dent in homelessness. Okay. So,
no dents.
The last one I want to talk about really quickly is he talks about crime and he quotes Bobby Kennedy, not RFK Jr., Bobby Kennedy, OG Bobby Kennedy. He says, a nation, this is Bobby Kennedy's quote, which surrenders to crime, whether by indifference or heavy-handed repression, is a society which has resigned itself to failure. Newsom then says, our approach is to be neither indifferent to the realities of the present day nor revert to heavy-handed policies that have marked the failures of the past. We're funding local law enforcement and prosecutors to invest in and solve more crime, bolstering the Attorney General's office, prosecuting organized theft rings and getting illegal guns off the streets. But we're also investing hundreds of millions in new programs to tackle the root causes of crime, doubling down on proven violence prevention programs. That's the California way. So real quick, this is from the Public Policy Institute of California. Before I go into the numbers, do you think he has made a dent in reversing the crime rate increase in California?
Yeah.
Okay. California's violent crime rate increased in 2022. California's violent crime increased by 5.7% from 468 crimes per 100,000 residents in 2021 to 495 in 2022. Aggravated assaults were 67% of reported violent crimes. Violent crime has increased in recent years, like the nation. California's seen increases in violent crimes in the years since the pandemic hit. state's violent crime rate is up by 13.5% compared to the pre-COVID rate of 2019. So, not tackling crime. And crime is not going down. So, do you think he's delivered on his promise to help decrease crime in California?
Help decrease? No. It sounds like he is not. But, you know, he did propose a 26th Amendment to get rid of all guns, and so that should help, right?
Yeah. That's his new thing, is he wants the 26th Amendment to ban, I don't know, guns he finds scary and all these, you know, leftist pipe dreams about guns. It'll never pass. I mean, it's ridiculous. No one, if anybody knows anything about passing amendments, it's really hard to do. You're not going to get 3/4 of the states to agree to a 26th Amendment to limit that much gun rights. But, you know, it's a good political talking point. So. All right, so we've gone through a whole bunch of things. We've gone through the crime, homelessness, the economy, environment, oil, all that stuff. I guess to close out, because we're at the top of the hour, do you think we need a second recall of Gavin Newsom? After reviewing everything that he has failed to do, do you think it's warranted to say he does need another recall?
I have mixed opinions on this.
Okay.
He's a failure. He is ruining our state. He's an absolute failure. He needs to go. But I think you know where I stand with it is an election year. I feel like our time, focus, energy, money, all the things, we should really just flip seats in the assembly to get rid of the supermajority. Because you have to remember, if we don't have a supermajority sending crazy bills to Newsom, there won't be crazy bills for Newsom to sign. Mm-hmm. And policy does matter. I mean, most of this is stupid policies he's signed into law. They're absolutely asinine. And we've learned no one can math. So let's flip seats. I understand. I have no respect for Newsom. There's nothing to justify any of this. I was going to ask you, which we're kind of out of time, but I was going to say, is there even anything good we can say that Newsom did for California? I don't even know. I don't have an answer to that. But I would say nix the recall. And please, everyone, really get out and get people to flip seats. Get people to vote. Get, like, seriously, spend your time and energy instead of collecting signatures for a recall. I mean, maybe we can do both. And I don't want to tell people, like, what to believe in. If that's your passion, do it. Personally, me, I say no, don't. Let's show Newsom. Like, that's what we can really stick it to him. Flip these seats. Start overturning a lot of these bills. Start, you know, introducing new ones to outdo these disgusting, stupid policies, fix things, and then, like, show everyone, look how, like, render him useless, show how asinine he is, and don't let him run for president ever because he would just be a laughing joke in the entire nation.
Right. No, those are all valid points. I think the long-term health of California is in flipping the legislature. We've said that 1,000 times. If you want to really change things in California, you got to flip the legislature, or at least break. I mean, flipping the legislature is going to be a long time coming, but breaking the supermajority makes a big difference. Like you said, it does change the dynamic in Sacramento. You're not getting so many crazy Bay Area politician bills that are getting to Newsom's desk. Yeah, I would say if you want to show your disgust with how California is being run, you know, start flipping those seats. Start flipping an assembly seat or a Senate seat or something like that. I think that sends a bigger message to those in power in California when things start, seats flip from Democrat to Republican or just away from Democrat, doesn't have to be too Republican.
Yeah.
Could be independent, libertarian, whatever. But I think that sends a more powerful message to everybody in Sacramento if they start to lose their grip on the state. And sure, we can look at all this stuff and say, does Newsom deserve to be recalled? Based on that job performance, yes, he does deserve to be recalled. He's delivered on literally nothing. Things have only gotten worse. I can't think of one thing that's actually happened that's gotten better under Gavin Newsom. So yeah, does he deserve to get recalled? Sure. But it's like, take that same energy to recall Gavin Newsom and put it towards local elections that actually will have an impact on California. because I don't, you know, we can recall, they can get the signatures, they can get a million signatures again, put it back on the ballot, try again. I believe it's probably going to end up still being 60-40. He'll win again in a landslide. He'll defeat it. And then we'll be back at square one. So it's a mixed bag. I think he deserves to be recalled. Do I think there's better things to spend our time and money on? Yeah, I think there's better races, especially this year. 2024 is a big year, so presidential years are always big. There's a lot of seats in the state legislature that are vulnerable and flippable, so focus on those.
And in 2021, we saw the attitude of, which I totally understand, and I'm not judging anyone, but it gets exhausting, and people put a lot of energy into the recall, and they were very excited to have this option to recall him. Then it didn't go through, and so many people then, you know, 2022 was just right around the corner, and they were like, what's the point of voting? It's like, my vote didn't matter. It didn't do anything. We tried to recall him, and they get that, like, and so I just feel like if that happens again, and then, you know, he still stays in office, then people are going to go into 2026 with that, like, an even more worse attitude. Like, we've tried. We did it. We put all of our energy and time and money into it, and it got us nowhere, so why do I want to vote now? What's the point?
Yeah.
And again, I don't say that judgingly, like we get burnt out. And I just feel like that's why we already have an election going on. Let's really show them where we stand at this election.
And more importantly, you know, Newsom is, for lack of not, I don't want to compliment him. He is remaining relatively as moderate as possible so that he can run for president in 2020, which is a blessing in disguise for us Californians that he has vetoed a lot of stuff that's far left. If you want to, he's going to be gone in 2 years regardless. So whether we recall him and he's gone next year, or he's gone in 2 years, it doesn't really change anything. He'll be gone. I'm worried about the next person up who could be even more far left than Newsom, which is why, again, focusing on the state legislature is so important. Because if you focus on the state legislature, break that supermajority, then all of a sudden that far left governor doesn't have as much power to pass as much as he wants. So
yeah.
It's protecting the future by focusing on the legislature, not just Gavin Newsom and Reid.
Yes.
Any final thoughts before we sign off?
Yes. Just to do a really, okay. really quick recap. So we talked about how he's failed with fixing gas prices and electric vehicles are kind of going nowhere right now. He's failed with jobs, job growth. Not that that's really the government's job, but clearly they've lied about what's been going on, we're wrong, whatever. He didn't save lives, like he said. Hasn't solved it or even made a dent in homelessness. Crime rates are higher. We didn't even get to the fact that homeowners insurance policies are being just canceled across the state, and homeowners insurance companies are like, nope, not even going to do that anymore. And they're still pushing reparations. And the fact that we have what is our deficit right now? It is like in the high
$73 billion,
and now Prop 1 passed, and we think we're going to afford all these things, and yet our unemployment is the highest in the nation. So good luck, California. Good luck.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
We all have each other.
But we have each other. And you have, and those listening, you always have this podcast where we try to inform you with a sense of brevity and lightness to it to at least make you laugh about what's going on. So try to keep you informed as much as possible. But yeah, it's rough out there. But again, focus on local. Start flipping things here and there, you can start seeing positive change. With that,
we assure you we'll be making fun of everyone who runs against Newsom, because oh my gosh, do we have some funny offline conversations.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I can't wait to see the circus that rolls into town if there is actually a recall. Anyway, on that note, I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. As always, make sure you like, share, subscribe, review. Helps with the algorithm, helps people find us. Other people who are interested in California politics. And then best thing you can do to support the show that's absolutely free is share it with a friend, family, colleague, whatever. Just let them know about us and tell them to give us a listen. So on that note, we'll see you on the next one. Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it. And follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.